Hello, everyone. This is a brief sharing on the history of astrology, where astrology came from, how it came to be developed, and what our version of astrology that I teach, shamanic astrology, a little bit at the end of this recording, how it came to be in that fashion. My name is Eric Roth, and so why don't we jump right into what astrology is? And a lot of courses, a lot of astrology classes, and books we read out there, there aren't too many references or books specifically or classes specifically on where astrology came from, what it is, how it came to be, and how just suddenly, like when people take classes, it just simply pops in there as if it was already constructed. But there is a bit of a history behind it and how it came to be that is very complex and is one of the oldest, in some cases people call it science and other people call it an art form. And where it really boils down to, it's more of a philosophical relationship with the stars, a spiritual relationship with them. It has a certain level of poetry to it, and it's more about the complete picture of who we are as human beings, the totality of us, rather than simply the numbers or the math or measuring the relationship with mathematics, for example, or hard science. This is not so much about that, even though it's part of the field of astrology. Where it began was more in line with understanding the fundamentals of who we are as human beings. And we look up into the sky and we see the stars. We see the seasons change. We see the sky, the night sky changes, the angle of the sun. The days grow shorter or the grid days grow longer, and vice versa with the night. The moon goes through its various phases. And as it does all of this, people observe, people notice, we feel and experience things with these changes. The moon and the sun, especially, I think that is some of the earliest astrology comes from, is being able to see the connection with our seasons. It's just an observance of the seasons and the way the plants and the animals react to the seasons, and even human beings, and how we shift before we started living indoors a lot of our lives. You know, obviously, many thousands of years ago, outdoors was, for the most part, where we lived a lot of our lives, except during perhaps some of the winters where we, really had to conserve our energy and live inside in different kinds of dwellings and caves, for example. But we always had a relationship with the stars, and we could always use it to. As we started to understand and observe it, we started to realize that there was a relationship, why certain star patterns were coming up during certain seasons, why the sun was doing what it was doing, going up and down the sky, and the moon phases. A lot of calendars were built based on both the sun and the moon, mostly the moon in the beginning, but then the sun ended up coming up a bit later, depending on where one lived on the globe. There were a wide variety of calendar systems that were developed, and a wide variety of ways to connect, and especially in regards to agriculture, in regards to how we felt in the community, and the timings of say meetings and ceremonies, as well as battles. All of that had a powerful relationship with the sun, the moon, and planets and stars. Now, these cultures throughout the globe, many of them, even the smaller, some of the smaller tribes and clans, had some relationship, some kind of relationship with the stars, and they had a way of, you know, being able to tell time with them. Again, creating different ways to create their own calendar. Some of them were written down, many of them were not, and were passed down through observations, oral history, or the building of megalithic structures like stone, big stone circles, you know, and eventually giant pyramids and other temples that helped humanity connect to the sky above, as well as like a building a bridge between the celestial world and the earth plane. And we've found throughout history where, I mean, the origin of the actual astrology comes from the observance of all of this. And that observance can be traced back at least 11,000 years. There is a, if not much longer, there are certainly, if you go back even farther to, there are some ancient caves in Europe, Spain, France, that have diagrams, cave paintings on there of the certain star formations, star constellations, and moon phases. They were tracking it. They were at least observing it, and basically at the very minimum, had deep thoughts around this particular stuff. And one in particular, one specifically was the constellation of the Bull, which we see as kind of a giant V shape and with horns, and that also contains the smaller grouping of stars called the Pleiades, which probably many of you are familiar with. It's a small grouping of stars that is found throughout mythology, that in European, Mesopotamian, and in the Americas, as well as in other Asian cultures, was written about, was talked about, was shared about from generation to generation to generation. And this was copied down during, you know, we're talking about here 20 to 30,000 years ago, somewhat sometimes older. So humanity stretches back as far as our who we are as human beings. Yeah, we didn't have the electricity, we didn't have the telescopes, we didn't have the way we structure our civilization or the governments, transportation methods at that time, but we still had the same kind of brain. Our souls were there. We had powerful levels of spirituality and our connection to the divine energy, the Mother Goddess. All of that was present for tens of thousands of years. If we flash forward, and one of those examples, another example is a temple that was built, I believe it was 9500 BC. It could be off. It's an estimate because they don't know the exact date on this, but it was in ancient Mesopotamia, the Turkish area. And there are paintings or carvings on that temple that reference parts of the sky. And there are even certain alignments that are there that still are being studied and researched. But they were pointed to certain parts of the sky and aligned in certain ways because they were connected. They had a relationship with the stars and the planets at that time. So it's in some ways, you know, humanity itself has always had some relationship to the sky. And there is, I think it's the Dogon tribe in Africa, and even there's also a tribe in the Amazon, and I can't remember the exact tribal name, but it's talked talked about by Daniel Giammario, who created shamanic astrology, and he taught to me and the group that I was with that this particular tribe had a real powerful relationship with the sky. When a researcher went down to study that tribe, they asked the researcher about how many stars that he could see, you know, from where he lived. And he said, well, he doesn't see many stars from there, and because of all the lights that are there. And then the elder of the tribe responded to him, then how do you think? So that question that came up was so profound and kind of stunned the researcher. In fact, it's a question that even today we can look at in a lot of our urban environments with light pollution. We can't even really, becoming fewer and fewer places where we can see the complete night sky under ideal conditions. And now they've got, all across the world now, they're developing international dark sky areas where there is little or no light pollution whatsoever. And it requires certain international designation to get that, certain requirements to get that designation by the communities and the body that runs that. But it just points out, I mean, I grew up in Los Angeles, born and raised, and there you can only see very few stars from where I grew up. And it was only until I was able to go outside LA and see the night sky when I was 18 that I finally saw the band of the Milky Way and saw the thousands of stars that were present was really changed the trajectory of my life. It affected me in a such a profound way that I knew that at that age that I was going to have a deeper relationship with the night sky in some fashion, and I had no idea how it would necessarily manifest at that time. But let's go back into the history. What that example is just basically showing is this is our relationship with the stars is and the planets and the moon and the sun is, even if we ignore it, it's still there. It's still affecting us. We're still creatures or physical bodies, spiritual bodies that are intimately connected to these to the movement of the night sky, the sun and the moon, and the way the spin of the Earth and its orbit around the sun. All of those play enormous roles to develop who we are as human beings. Beyond, of course, our parental lineage, our genetics, they all play a role in sharing with us who we are in this world, in this lifetime, and beyond. So, going back in time, how did these astrology charts? Where did the signs come from? Where did the constellations come from? Well, to pinpoint that into one specific area is relatively easy, except that, of course, if you go throughout the world, cultures like in the Americas, Native American cultures, South American indigenous cultures, Australia, the Polynesians, for example, they all had various, and Chinese, they all had various names for these constellations. Some of them were fairly universal. Others changed depending on the region that you were researching. So, but our current Western modern astrology that most people are aware of, at least cursorily, that regarding our sun sign, where do these names come from? Well, it could be pointed to ancient Mesopotamia. This is an area that is currently occupied by, it's plagued by wars, and that's continued to be plagued by wars, Iraq, Iran, Syria. These Turkey, to some extent, Egyptian area, that whole area is the Eastern Mediterranean and the ancient Mesopotamian areas. Sumerian peoples, Babylonian peoples, Akkadian, and some other cultures that rose from that area. This is the area where our modern astrology arose from. In fact, a lot of things began. In fact, that's where we found writing originally began, in that area, at least in our current understanding of it. It doesn't mean that other areas didn't have writing around the same time or before, which is that we haven't found it yet. But as far as our knowledge of the stars, that's where it originally came from. The modern constellations that we see, especially around the where the sun travels through each year, originate from that place, from especially Babylon, where it was more refined. It was taken from earlier peoples, Sumer and Akkadia. Babylon rose, and this is at about 2,500 years ago. So around between the 5th century BC, really, is when a division of time was broken down into 12 equal parts. And this was based on the sun. And this is attributed to Babylon. There was a Greek from Athens, Euctemon, in 432 BC, who was inspired by how the Babylonians divided the sky as far as the constellations go, and he named seasonal points. So this is we can think of this as a temporal zodiac or a seasonal division, and only bears resemblance to the actual original names of the constellations. There's still a lot of confusion here, even amongst astrologers and astronomers, and especially people who don't know very much or don't have much knowledge of this area, that the same names that you see in the sky, like Leo the lion, is the same name as the astrological sign. But they are, the signs and constellations are completely separate from each other. They are not the same. One is a what we call a spatial division. So it's marking a if it was mapping on Earth, it'd be a geographical mapping position. But because it's in space, it's like a cosmic coordinates of the where the stars are located. But if we look at the signs themselves, this guy Euctemon, Euctemon. In fact, there's a handout that's connected to this introduction to astrology, the history of astrology, that you can reference as well. That can help you understand this, at least on a real basic level. So the names of the signs originated from Babylon, Euctemon from Athens in 432 BC. He developed this calendar, and it was based on the seasonal points, the equinoxes, the solstices, and then three signs in between a solstice and equinox, and six signs in between each solstice, which made for 12. And so that's where we got our 12 signs. But before that, the constellations were named many centuries prior to that by the Babylonians. And the records about the constellations, go back over 3,000 years, if not closer to 4,000 years, around these particular names, and some constellations even farther back. There's research that that has been done that show that it goes, some of the names of the constellations go back 6,000 or more years. And so, you know, and then we can also reference those cave paintings I mentioned, that one constellation that was showing, and how it was connected to the bull. And these constellations generally stay in the same formation over long periods of time. And they will shift, but, you know, over many tens of thousands of years, they will start to shift. But it's beyond, usually beyond our human perception, and how fast these stars actually move, in actual, relatively speaking, not in relation to our perspective, but in actual space itself, which can shift our understanding of how they're connected to the other stars. But that's a whole different topic there. So I'm going to put more focus here on this history part. Now, as astrology started to be born out of Babylon, and then before Euctemon came into the fore, India also developed, as well as Egypt, they have their own versions of astrology. And in India, they took the Babylonian version and kept it in a way that formed something called the sidereal zodiac, which was something that was used prior to Euctemon in 432 BC. And this was what you might find if you start studying what people say, oh, have you had a Vedic astrology reading? Well, that's the system they use. And they don't use, they only use the ancient way of dividing the constellations, not the signs themselves. They stick, or they might, if they do reference the signs, they say that the signs are somehow, you know, disjointed with and or overlay on the constellations, like they're part of it. And it's a totally different system, a totally different way of interpreting astrology. And Vedic astrology, they don't even incorporate the planets that were found in the 17th, 18th, and 19th and 20th century. Neptune, Uranus, Pluto, Chiron, and any other bodies that were discovered in even in the 21st century. So that's a Vedic system, and it's based on what we call a sidereal zodiac. The other kind of zodiac that's present is what we call the astronomical zodiac, which is the division of the constellations, similar to sidereal, except they basically divide it almost artificially. In 1928, a group of astronomers got together and divided up the sky into 88 constellations, including the ones along the band of the ecliptic, which is called the path of the sun. So when you're seeing the sun travel across the sky, that's what it's traveling along, something called the ecliptic. And that's where the word eclipse comes from as well. So the lunar eclipse that was very well-known recently, and in 2017, the big total solar eclipse across the United States. So that's where that word comes from. And this is the constellations, when astronomers are referring to a zodiac, they're referring to just their brand of the zodiac. In fact, this is an area where you might find that astronomers themselves, some of them, might say, well, astrology doesn't work because the signs are off by a certain amount of degrees from the constellation. Well, and that there's another constellation called Ophiuchus in there. Well, that's an astronomical, you know, how they artificially divided those stars. And then what they're really missing, though, is that Western astrology, this tropical zodiac is what is based that what Western astrology is based upon. That was created by Euctemon in 432 BC. Is this these seasonal or temporal signs, and they are always tied, fixed to the seasonal points on the planet in its tilt, in its spin, in its orbit around the sun. This is the area that when I start talking about in the Shamanic Astrology 101 class, as you will be finding out, this is the system, or at least the zodiac based that Shamanic Astrology looks toward as the how to, in some regards, define the signs and the measurement of the planets through the signs and so forth. This is also a basis of many different Western astrology systems, evolutionary astrology, humanistic astrology. There are other kinds of astrology out there, and then each astrologer might even have his or her own brand out there as well. So that's a brief history there. The Mayans, for example, created their own astrology system, and they had a really powerful relationship with the stars, with the planets, with Venus, Sun, and Moon, and the other planets. But it's not a system that we necessarily incorporate into shamanic astrology, although there is some inspiration in how they viewed Venus, because they developed their own calendar based upon Venus. They had different, what they call, counts, and Venus was one of those counts that they utilized. So they had many calendars running concurrently together. The Chinese also had their own form of astrology that was separate from what the India peoples developed, what the Mesopotamian peoples developed, and the Greeks developed. And so that is also a system that is different from what we're talking about in this type of astrology. There is parts of what they do in Chinese astrology that also inspires how we view Jupiter, for example, in the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School and the Shamanic Astrology Paradigm, which I'm going to be teaching here at the Shamanic Astrology 101 class. So there are many people, many astrologers out there, and a lot of books written on this subject. And one of the there's many different definitions of astrology and how how we can look at it. And I mentioned at the very beginning that astrology is more like a philosophy or a poetry than it is a science or an art. In fact, it's probably closer, if I were to choose between science and art, I would say closer to an art. But poetry and philosophy seem to fit a lot better, because it is something that's open to interpretation. It's similar in the way we look at dreams in some ways. We're dealing with many complexities of on a psychological level. And when we talk about a person's unique psychology, there's nothing here that's about being predictable. That you might get a sense of one's intent, maybe even a sense of the direction that the person is going. Maybe in certain reactions you might find some common ground there, or in other ways it's going to be completely unpredictable. But it's not like the cause and effect situation you might find in hard science, where for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction that you're going to find in a laboratory, for example. This is not, the laboratory is the cosmos. And you know, whatever can happen will happen in it. And so it is not something where you have to, you know, become a science major to understand it. There is some number crunching. There is some things that, you know, on a technical level, if you want to learn more beyond Shamanic Astrology 101, that you'll need to understand, in, especially in calculating a planet, what we call planetary transits or initiations. There is things that you will need to understand from that level. But a lot of this other stuff is psychological, philosophical, and a sense of connecting with your creative self, imagination, and working with that. Charles Ponce, who wrote a book called The Game of Wizards, which I recommend, and it talks about the first, this broken into three parts. The first part is about astrology. And there's a quote in here I'm going to read, and it's that ancient cosmologic speculation, and thus eventually astrology, was the result of philosophic considerations on the nature of the universe and the relationship of humanity to powers beyond the range of its consciousness. In short, the parents of astrology were neither magicians nor charlatans, but philosophers. So it's that curiosity, that wonderment, that sense of expansion of consciousness, self, into matters that go beyond the rational mind, beyond the intellect, into the stars themselves, the planets, that helped birth astrology. It's that wandering mind, that mind of dreams, of imagination, of wonder, curiosity, that allowed this to come to form. And certainly when one goes out under the stars and kind of suspends their intellect for some moments, they can be in awe over what they see, what they perceive, what they feel, the experience. There's a kinesthetic relationship there. And this is, the stars are something that was born gods and goddesses of all kinds. And all the mythic stories that we hear, in fact, even the hero's journey from Joseph Campbell, the story of, some of you may even recognize, of course, the mythological story of the descent of Inanna, the ancient precursor to Venus, the goddess Venus in Roman mythology. She was born of the stars, queen of heaven and earth, and it was that relationship with that planet that formulated that understanding of the initiation that goes on within us. There are other myths that are definitely connected to the movement of the planets and the stars. All one has to do is become curious and read and explore to find out more about that. I know in the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School we do teach many things around mythology and cosmology that relate to a lot of this stuff. But in this basic course, this I won't cover very much of it, except just in referencing it here. In other history of astrology, there. Astrology kind of took a turn after the collapse of the Roman Empire, and especially the rise of Christianity, which coincidentally actually used astrology in its origins. There is a lot of astrological and astronomical connections in the Christian Bible, as well as other religious texts. that point to astrology and the movement of the planets, the sun, moon, and the stars. Again, all one has to do is look and connect the dots, but they're definitely there, they're visible. Which is kind of ironic because when Christianity took over as the main religion and began to take over as the main religion in Europe, and starting with the Roman Empire, it was the powers that be that tried to shut down everything that was they perceived as a threat to their power, to Christian power. And one of those threats was the study of astrology, and they were definitely blacklisted for a long time. Even though certain kings and queens over time entertained the idea of astrologers off and on throughout the centuries, it really kind of was a dark art, so to speak, for many centuries until the age of enlightenment, even when science was born and started to even discount astrology even more with their explorations of just the age of because the age of enlightenment was also the age of rationality, that they broke apart the imagination and the curiosity. But interesting enough, the founding fathers of the United States, there's evidence that they also used astrology in not only the design of Washington, D.C., but in the founding time on that special day, July 4th, 1776, and the study of that particular astrology chart, the chart of the U.S., points to George Washington and others having some knowledge of astrology in which they brought forth this country. Astrology has been used and been around for a really, really, really long time, many thousands of years. And now, how astrology came to be and where it is right now, there is another incarnation that happened in the last few centuries. And this incarnation is relatively new in the way Western astrology formulated, or formed, I should say, in this modern age. In the 1930s, sun sign astrology was only briefly looked at. It was never used in the same way that it's been used in popular astrology books. Sun sign astrology did not even exist. It was only there was a buildup in the 1800s. There was various astrology books that came out in Western culture. And other publications, like one called Raphael's Prophetic Ephemeris, that were focused on the signs of the sun, explaining one's nature, what will happen to them on a given day. It was done in order to sell books. It was done in order to sell newspapers and publications. It was done as a commercial enterprise rather than something that was a true exploration and a help to people. And in 1930, and then again in 1937, in Britain, there was a publication called the Sunday Express. And this publication is still around. They've renamed it. I think it's just the Daily Express publication right now in the United Kingdom. But an astrologer named R.H. Naylor began to write a column called What the Stars Foretell. And he was, because there was a prediction that actually came true, that he actually hit something on the nail, the publication decided to bring him on as a long-term guest writer in helping people work with their own sun signs. And so he would write what we call a horoscope and find a 30-day period for them. And also originally based on just basically the birthday. So without knowing anything else about the person, he was dividing everybody into 12 groups. Prior to that, most in ancient Greece, actually, as an example, they would familiarize themselves based on their moon sign and not their sun sign, because the moon sign was more specific. In fact, the moon changed signs every 2.5 days, where the sun would change signs every 30 days. I've got a on this history of astrology document that you have. There's a law, several paragraphs about this particular what was going on at that time, and please do read about it, and it kind of gives you a greater understanding. Also, the word horoscope is an interesting word, because when you go back to the Hellenistic period, which is essentially the period before or basically Alexander the Great, this is the time when actually it was Hellenistic was just after he died. This was the time when that word horoscope and where that word was born, it meant the hour of birth or the hour of where somebody was located at the birth. So it technically meant a person's rising sign. So the rising sign, no matter what Western astrology you use or what house system one might encounter, the rising sign is the sign, not the constellation, but the sign that is rising in the eastern horizon when you are born. And it could be one of 12 signs. And you'll come to find out in the 101 class that it means how we interpret it in shamanic astrology is the direction we're going in our life. What sign we're a beginner at in this lifetime, what our identity project is. It's one of the symbols of life purpose. And so when we look to the east, and the east has is obviously one of the four major directions and has countless mythological connections to all cultures throughout the globe, and it, because it's an area where stellar bodies rise, sun, moon, stars, planets, it's like the, especially with the dawning of the sun, it's a new day, it's a new tomorrow, and it's a new beginning. And so we see that come up, and it's a beginning for us. And that's why the rising sign, or what we call also the ascendant, the sign that's coming up over the eastern horizon when you're born, is the place of our new territory, our beginning self. So we've reviewed sun signs and how they became. They were there. They were developed to sell newspapers, to sell publications, because they could easily, share what a sign is, and just relate to what qualities and what one may potentially experience. It was a way to for entertainment purposes than a real connection to ourselves. So this is the area of astrology that, because it was really popular and why it tended to be turned off, become a turnoff by a lot of people who had a deeper understanding of life, because it wasn't, they had, a lot of people had trouble connecting it, but it was fun to read, and they wanted to discover themselves, and it was full of general predictions, nothing truly that described who the person, who they were. It was more surface and mundane information. But in shamanic astrology, it is much more deep, rich, as is some other forms of astrology, just in different ways. So as we look and we come forward, there, I'm going to include when I would recommend. There is a video. There are some handouts, some references that are going to be included in this. If you're reading or listening to this particular audio, and you want to have links to these other references, and they're not included in the email, please feel free to reach out to me and ask for that, because they are free. But there will be more information about that. But just to give you some brief information, shamanic astrology, how that was developed, which is Daniel Giammario, the originator and founder of shamanic astrology. He taught me. Kaylin Castell, a co-founder of the school, also played a significant role in my own education in shamanic astrology. And but the original time when shamanic astrology was developed was in the 1980s. Daniel began to take astrology on an experiential quest. Before, it was done through books, through just creating astrology charts, not really going out and experiencing so much the stars, the eclipses, and the planets in the night sky. So he began to gain interest in doing this, and through his journey to Mount Shasta, spending time at Joshua Tree National Park in California, and various other places actually around the world, Hawaii, the United Kingdom, two of the more notable places, where he started to understand that humanity had a powerful relationship to the stars, with these ancient megalithic temples, buildings, places where there is it's a sacred place, sacred region, where the priestesses, ancient priestesses, worked. And priests connected to the stars, and they did ceremony and worked with them in an experiential way, a spiritual way. And he was moved by all of this and had, really powerful experiences. And these powerful experiences led him to develop a whole new system of astrology. Some of his other influencers were his great mentor, who also was a powerful humanistic astrologer, called Dane Rudyar, and spelled Rudhyar. And I do recommend those that are willing to go into really deep philosophical territory of astrology, that would be one to read about. He's wrote numerous books of astrology, and he's considered the founder of the free will, or the humanistic movement of astrology. That's one of Daniel Giammario's more influential mentors. And he wrote, he developed shamanic astrology in the 1980s. And then when he met Kaylin Castell in the early 90s, he and her co-wrote, she basically did a lot of the transcribing and organizing for Daniel, through his recordings and his dictation, the Shamanic Astrology Handbook. And this has been around since 1994. There's been various incarnations of it, but now, we're looking at 24 years of this book being around. And this is on sale at Amazon. I have copies available to sell. But it's the foundational book of this paradigm, which I fully recommend for those that are wanting to learn more about shamanic astrology. That's a great place to start. Daniel also created different ways of interpreting the cycles, such as the Venus return cycle, which Kaylin Castell has taken to a whole new level with her teleclass series with Tammy Brunk. He's also helped redefine the Mars synodic cycle and how we have Mars returns in our lives, Mercury returns in our lives, and defining that, you know, this shamanic astrology is a holistic type of body, a holistic system that honors the light and the shadow of who we are. It is the totality, so it is everything that we are, and not ignoring the bad parts or the good parts, and helping us from a psychological, spiritual level, and also as it weaves in the mythology and the psychological information to help empower who we are so that we can make informed decisions and utilize our free will to make those decisions and not simply rely on some kind of chance prediction that it's the astrology chart itself, which contains our rising sign, which contains our sun and moon and all the planets. It's a map of our intent in life. And it's one tool among many tools out there in the world that can help us better ourselves as human beings, become more authentic in this lifetime. You know, be able to understand our relationship patterning better, our patterning around what our calling is in life, our spiritual path. All of that is built into this particular system. You know, encourage you to watch the free videos that are out there that can, you know, that you can find out more and deeply, and as far, and especially the Shamanic Astrology Handbook. Daniel wrote a second book that goes more into the origins of shamanic astrology and the Mars and Venus material, which is called The Origins of the Shamanic Astrology Paradigm. That's the title of the book. Also available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. But these are books that, you know, I welcome you to read if you are interested in learning more about this. But this recording is to give you a greater taste of where astrology came from, how, you know, my perception where I see it, and my own education through astrology, and how I'm also still open to learning more and more about it. I will be also writing about this not only in my own newsletter, but eventually coming out with various books that are based upon my own experiences and my working with clients and my insights into astrology and the various discussions I've had with other astrologers and teachers and so forth that have come forth over the years. This should complete this particular recording. I may do other ones on other topics, but in this case, I'm not going to, for a 101 class, this is not meant to overwhelm, but to be a value-added component here to what you're learning. Feel free to ask me questions during the Shamanic Astrology 101 class and beyond. So thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to more in the future. Take care. Cosmic blessings.